From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past Friday in the state of Washington. A man you've never heard of made an announcement that could conceivably, possibly, make him the most powerful person in the country. His name is Robert Sachicum. He's one of the 12 designated Democratic electors assigned to vote in the Electoral College for Washington State. So what's the big deal? Well, Hillary Clinton is going to win Washington State today, and Robert Sachicum is vowing not to cast his Electoral College vote for her. Robert explains that he was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and as a Native American, he does not believe Hillary Clinton cares about his people. He also says that Clinton is a criminal and should be in prison. If you're like me, you're probably wondering, can he do that? Aren't Electoral College votes pre-pledged? And the answer is apparently he can do that. And get this, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the electors are required to vote for a particular candidate. Some states have penalties for so-called faithless electors. What's the penalty? A $1,000 fine. Sachicum says he'll gladly pay it because someone has to speak out against Hillary Clinton. Well, no dissenting Electoral College voter has ever changed the outcome of a presidential election. There is a scenario tonight in which Hillary Clinton ends up with exactly 270 electoral votes. And if Sachicum won't vote for her, that would keep her under the winning threshold and throw the election over to the House of Representatives, which is, of course, controlled by Republicans. All of which is a long way of introducing just one part of our conversation this hour. Gallup finds that 6 in 10 Americans want to abolish the Electoral College and just allow the popular vote to determine the presidential election. And with jokers like Robert Sachicum abrogating his duty, maybe we can see why. Well, this hour, let's talk about the election, the Electoral College, the undecided voters who will have to make a choice in the ballot box today eventually, and even the many Americans choosing not to vote at all. My guests for the hour include Kathleen Donovan. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. Kathleen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Nealon is the professor and chairperson in the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. Tim, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And live and in studio is the last undecided voter in the country, and it's Dan Becker. Dan, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're still undecided right now.
I have not voted. I'm still undecided right now. I'm willing to be swayed. I'm
not here to sway you. I'm here to ask you, are you going to make up your mind eventually?
I will. Yeah, I am planning on voting today.
Okay. All right. Well, are you undecided only on the presidential election or on other issues as well?
Only on the presidential election.
Okay. When did you decide what to have for breakfast this morning? Was that like a hard call?
that was a moment decision.
See, you're like a moment decision guy, aren't you? You're like, I'm not going to decide until it's in that moment.
That was standing in the kitchen saying, what do I have at my disposal?
All right, very good. And briefly, you're undecided, but absolutely planning to vote today. You didn't think,
correct,
I'm not going to vote.
Correct. There was definitely a time period where I thought about not voting, mm-hmm, and I had enough people convince me that that's not good.
Okay.
for lack of a better phrase.
Okay. And briefly on the presidential side, you're undecided why?
Long story short, I think I'm undecided because I equally dislike both candidates so much. I would love to say I'm undecided because I love both candidates so much, but it's the total opposite of that. I just haven't seen... I've seen too much bad coming out of both candidates to make me say, why am I having to pick between the lesser of two evils?
Okay. There are other candidates. Have you thought about other candidates not in the major parties?
Nope. To be honest, I have been so... brief history of me. I have never been a political person. Okay. I stayed away politics my entire life. Growing up, I was sort of a hippie kid where I was like, yeah, man, let's all just get together, peace, love, happiness. And the only thing I was seeing was, especially in high school, was all these high schooler kids who said, yeah, we're expert at politics. We know everything there is to know about it. And that led to so much anger, and that led to so many arguments.
You were
so much
tuned out by some of the condescension?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? This is a bad topic to get into because it doesn't go anywhere good. So I stayed at it for a long time. When I was in college, I went to school in Pennsylvania and didn't really pay attention to it, didn't take the effort it would take to get the absentee ballot or anything like that. And then this was the first election where I was really like, I'm going to buckle down. I'm really going to pay attention to it. In terms of a presidential perspective.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more later this hour as we talk about undecided voters. We talk about those choosing not to vote, which is not Dan. And one more question I've got to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
You're wearing a red zip-up sweater. I mean, did you?
Totally unplanned. I'm wearing a blue tie. Is that?
No, I'm talking about
Ken Bone.
Ken Bone.
Oh, Ken Bone.
There's a bit of a Ken Boneism here.
A little bit.
And it's more of a maroon. It's more of a maroon. It's not quite a red.
Yeah.
This is not an homage to Ken Bone.
I'm doing whatever I need to do to get my 15.
Kathleen, did you notice that? Did you notice?
Maybe subconsciously you put it on. Yeah.
I don't have the mustache for it.
Or a bow tie.
Or a bow tie. Right.
All right, Dan. Thank you for being here. I want to ask Tim and Kathleen how they feel about the story that I opened the hour with. And Tim, I'll start with you, that Electoral College elector who is saying, look, Hillary Clinton may win the state. She is not going to get my vote. I'm not going to pledge it for her. And just imagine if she ends up on 270 and that happens. Can you even conceive of the chaos that would cause?
I doubt very much that he would continue not to vote for Hillary Clinton if it was actually came down to his vote. I think he understands and has probably done the calculation, and he thinks she's going to win handily tonight. And so therefore, he's doing a protest, which is actually very legitimate in his mind and is constitutional. Now,
it is
constitutional. So therefore, he was put on that slate of electors by the Democrats in that state.
Yep.
So, I mean, clearly they assumed that he was going to be a faithful elector. And again, I'm not sure that he won't change his mind on all the states will get together on December 19th. The electors will gather in their state capitals and cast their ballots. Generally, they vote for the candidate who gets the plurality of votes in their state. New York is one of the states in 2014 that signed a law that says as soon as a number of states whose combined electoral votes are 270 or higher will enact this legislation, New York will follow the national popular vote model, and we will always give our electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote as opposed to just the state. So, you know, there's several ways we can go around this. We don't have to change the Constitution. We just have to change the states.
Yeah, and listeners, I want to hear from you. How do you feel about the Electoral College? 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're right here in Rochester, 263-9994. Tim, before I ask Kathleen the same question, I don't disagree with you that what this elector, Robert Sashikim in Washington State, is doing by saying, I will not cast that Electoral College vote for Hillary Clinton. I agree that it's a protest. And it's hard to imagine if she ended up on 270 or 269 or whatever the case was, right there on that threshold, that he would stay true to that. If he did, can you even conceive of the chaos? I cannot.
I can conceive of the chaos, actually. And I think
you were alive in 2000.
Yes. And and we study politics, Kathleen and I. We understand this has happened in the past, 1800, 1824, 1876, that this is not something that does not happen once in a while. But our constitutional system, despite 1876, where they were talking about marching on Washington and, you know, blood on the floor, you know what? We survived that chaos, and we got on just like we got on from 2000. We moved on.org, and I don't think that scenario is going to play out. And if it went to the House, I'm not sure that the Republicans in the House would vote for Trump.
You know, that's fascinating, Kathleen. Let's just have fun with this scenario for a second. And I say fun because it's fun because it's probably not going to happen. It would not be fun in reality to see the burning cars in the street with one man determined to prevent Hillary Clinton or whoever from getting to 270. I would think it's possible that Republicans in Congress would be appalled enough by that singular decision that they may not even decide that the will of the people, she probably would have won the popular vote. She probably would have ended up on 270 if not for this elector. They may even decide to faithfully vote for Hillary Clinton. Or am I crazy here? Republicans.
That's a pretty far stretch. Okay. The Republicans may not have united totally behind Donald Trump, but they are pretty united against Hillary Clinton. So I don't see them contemplating that possibility. But just to your point about sort of the pressure on that person in this scenario, which is highly improbable but not impossible, I think because he came out and made this announcement, which he did not have to do, right?
He could have cast his vote,
you know, privately and not said anything, and we would not know, right? But he has made that public. And I think people would definitely be breathing down his neck to change his vote. So I think that that's kind of a far-fetched scenario.
Yeah, it'd be like that Kevin Costner movie where everybody was promising the sun, the moon, and the stars. And I think Native Americans in Washington State would get a lot of promises and from the Hillary Clinton camp. So I think, you know, it might also be a political move. Let's not just say that it's – let's just say that ideology and idealism work very nicely in American politics.
Well, maybe that's this is a good way to pivot over towards the question on the Electoral College, Kathleen. When it comes to if we're going to stay with the Electoral College and not move to just a popular vote system, is it unhealthy to have electors saying, you're not going to be able to trust my vote, I'm going to go whatever I want no matter what my state does? Is that unhealthy?
I don't know that it's unhealthy necessarily. I think in general, right, the Electoral College system, you were mentioning there's a lot of frustration. People don't really understand what it's about. They want to abolish it. But these same people don't typically understand that the reason why we have it is because, in general, the framers had a lot of concerns about our ability to make good decisions. And so the Electoral College was sort of a checkpoint, right, so that we are not directly electing people. I think the primaries this year are perfect example of what happens when you when parties lose control to some extent to the people. The party, the Republican Party, was tried to sort of unite against Trump, but it was too late. I think that there are lots of other Republican candidates that would have been would have performed better in this election than Donald Trump has done. But in terms of you know, binding the electors, you know, you mentioned several states have passed laws that require that they vote according to their states. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, if you're someone, if you're the kind of person who sort of upholds the Constitution as this revered document, that it comes with sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that includes this Electoral College system and these electors who are ultimately, in some cases, free to do as they please. Mm.
Okay, well, before I get over your phone calls, because the phone is blown up with those who want to weigh in on on this issue and others, Dan, as the undecided voter in the room, you said you, as you were growing up, you've never really considered yourself a political person. Mm-hmm. What's your view as an undecided voter in this election, and someone who hasn't been all that political? What's your view of the Electoral College?
The Electoral College is always really confusing for me to understand.
Okay,
growing up, it was this big, confusing voting system that just never made sense. And at the end of the day, trying to understand it, I remember feeling like, so I cast my vote, but then it's some other politician somewhere that says, actually, this is what my state is voting for. And when you view politicians as a whole, you know, party loyalty is a huge thing. And I remember growing up thinking, what's the point of me even voting if this guy, this random politician somewhere who cast the vote for my state can just say, no, actually, we're doing this. And it was very confusing to understand. And I remember taking a class on all these different voting systems. And every single voting system was 100% fair. Nobody could look at it and say, this voting system is not fair. Every single voting system we used, we had a different outcome and a different winner. And I thought it was very interesting how there's so many different voting systems out there. I like the idea of a popular voting system only instead of the Electoral College. Primarily from a PR perspective and an understanding perspective. I think if you were to go to millennials, your 20-somethings, even your high schoolers, and say, we're doing away with all this. At the end of the day, it's just going to be who gets more votes. That's it. It's keep it nice and simple. I think from a PR perspective, it'd be much easier to convince people to vote. And I think in this election, too, so many people are not voting. And the biggest thing I've heard is because they feel like their vote is not going to be heard, whether they vote or not.
And is it because they feel like their state is already decided?
Right.
They're not in
it's
a swing state.
Because their state is already decided.
They're not in a swing state.
And their state is decided because whatever politician that runs that state at that time is a dirty politician who's being paid off to do this or being bribed to do this or being whatever. I mean, that's kind of the pessimistic sort of view that I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's pretty pessimistic.
it's not something I necessarily agree with either. But I do like the idea of just a popular vote by saying, you know, this many million people voted for this person, this many million people voted for these people, and that's it.
That's it.
And just keep it simple.
Okay.
Can I ask Dan?
Yeah.
What happens if there's no actual majority in the United
States?
That's
an issue.
See, that is an issue. At
right,
least the way
right.
the Electoral College
Nothing's
works
perfect, yeah.
is it allows the states to have a say. Because we have a federal mm-hmm. system. We have
right.
a bottom-up system, which includes the states, although mm-hmm. the you know abolition of the states appointing U.S. senators took some of that power away. But you know, at least that way, each state sort of has an inclination to have a stamp on what happens in the election. Mm-hmm. And you could seriously get multiple candidates running in a national election. We could end up like one of these countries where they elect people with like a third of the vote, which then the question is, do they really have a mandate to rule?
Right,
if you
right.
think it's bad now between Congress and the presidency, I think it might be even worse in the long run. I think there is some wisdom. You just tinker with the states. The states could allocate the votes based on congressional district. And then whoever got the most votes in the state.
But what percentage of the vote of the popular vote did Bill Clinton get in 1992?
He got less than 50% of the popular vote. But the electoral vote, he won handily. And that, I think, is the distinction. Because then you can at least point to, well, look, the states had a vote, and the majority of the states, essentially, the votes in the states said, yeah, Bill Clinton, as opposed to this nebulous, oh, well, he won 40. I mean, Lincoln won with 40%, but he won the Electoral College vote, which gave his mandate to rule a little more strength than just, hey, you know, 40% like me. So I think from a PR perspective, I think the Electoral College gives you some sort of, you know, a voice or force. Maybe Kathleen disagrees.
Yeah, I think if there was going to be any change you made to the Electoral College, absent sort of just a wholesale chucking of the system, it would be allocating the electoral votes proportionally the way that Nebraska and Maine do. I think that you get a much a reflection, an electoral count that's more reflective of the national vote than what we do with a winner-take-all system.
Sure, and I think the pushback to Tim's argument, and I understand Tim's argument, but and don't worry, if you're on the phones, this is the last point. We're coming right to your phones because I know a lot of you want to weigh in. The pushback to Tim's argument is this. Tim is saying, you know, Abraham Lincoln got 40%. Bill Clinton, I think, got, what, maybe 42%? Megan Mack, you want to fact-check me on that one? In 1992, what percentage did Bill Clinton get? But whatever it was certainly well below 50%. Closer to 40, I think. And then the question is then, can you govern with the mandate? And Tim's saying, well, sure, Ross Perot got 19%, but didn't get any electoral votes. And Bill Clinton got a solid majority of the electoral votes. So therefore, he does carry this patina of a mandate. Mm-hmm. But does that overinflate the idea? Does that give him almost this incentive to overreach because it's not representative of, if 40% elect you, 3 out of 5 Americans didn't vote for you, but you're still going to be the president, but maybe you shouldn't govern as if you have a big mandate. That's the pushback.
Well, and Bill Clinton certainly didn't. He was about triangulation.
And he got 43, by the way. Thank you,
right.
Megan.
Yes,
43.
Okay. So, yeah, and Bill Clinton actually triangulated. He worked, you know, as best he could to find a middle way, which was, you know, very popular in the 1990s. So I think that is actually a check on overreach from presidents. So, again, I guess, well, let's hear from the callers. Maybe they'll
know. Well, I'm going to start with Michael in Brighton, who thinks we should be done with the Electoral College. Right, Michael?
That's right. I think that, you know, what the Electoral College does is you have these, you know, states that have all the power, the ones that are the swing states. And, you know, instead of having red states and blue states, I think we should just be the United States, where every vote, you know, counts. And I think you'll get a lot more voter participation, even in a state like New York State, which is considered a blue state. Some people think, well, you know, why should I vote when already I know that my electors are going to be going for what's likely the Democratic candidate. You know, and I think there is a way around this whole issue of, you know, if there's more than if somebody doesn't get 50% of the vote. Obviously, if you get rid of the Electoral College, you'd have to have a runoff. You would have, because I think it is important to have the candidate have a popular mandate. And so you'd have to have another voting day where the top two vote getters are just are opposing each other, and one of them is going to come out as the winner. You know, I mean, there's a whole need to change the election system, both the day and everything else. I mean, if you really want more voter participation, you'll make every voter feel like their vote really counts. And we'll be the United States, not blue state, yellow state, or red state.
Michael, thanks for the phone call. Kathleen, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, to that point of sort of voting power and, you know, living in New York, for example, and knowing it's a blue state and people feeling sort of, you know, not wanting to turn out to vote for that. I mean, that certainly is, I think that that's a compelling point, right? Particularly, we often think about the battleground states in particular. They're getting all the attention from the presidential candidates. We sort of get ignored because it's a foregone conclusion. But also the small states, right? So every state gets at least 3 electoral votes, no matter how many people are living there. And so in places like Wyoming, for example, they actually per person have sort of more voting power than we do here in New York. So I think that is a very valid point. But to sort of increasing turnout, there's a lot of interesting research out there about sort of lowering the cost to voting, right? For example, North Dakota doesn't require voter registration, yet they don't have the highest voter turnout. States have gone to all-mail balloting, Oregon and Colorado and Washington. They don't have the highest turnout. Minnesota consistently has the highest turnout. It seems to be that the reason why people vote or don't vote is much more intrinsic, that they grow up in a family where politics is important, voting is important, that it becomes a habit, something that they do. And it turns out that when we lower the cost of voting, while it does help on the margins, it's often not as much as we think it's going to be.
Okay. And Michael, I would just add as well, yesterday on this program, we talked about the importance of today's vote numbers for the Green Party, for the Libertarian Party, for the Working Families Party in this state. And just as an observation, and this is just playing devil's advocate, I'm not taking a side here. I'm just kind of trying to work through as a thought experiment what happens if we do what Michael and what people like Dan Becker and 6 out of 10 Americans want, which is to get rid of the Electoral College. I think it would injure the desire to break what we call the duopoly. I think it would injure third parties because all of a sudden, if there is no Electoral College, there's no quote-unquote safe place to vote Green or Libertarian if you feel like there's only 2 candidates with a chance to win and I've got to cast a vote for one of them. We know that there will be people in this state, in California, in many others, who don't feel like swing states, but they can much more safely cast a vote for a third party saying, let's try to get them to 5%, let's get them more of an establishment support, let's eventually get them in the debates. And if we go to a popular vote system, I think it would probably injure third parties. That's just an observation. Tim Nealon, does that make sense to you?
It does, except there's a really interesting experiment they're doing at some local races where they're giving you 2 votes, your first vote and your second vote. And that gives you the leeway to vote for a minor party. If they don't reach a certain threshold, your first vote doesn't count, and your second vote is your safe vote, basically. You go for one of the major parties usually. And they've tried this locally, and it's really exciting because that, I think, could increase a voter interest in these minor parties. But again, at the same time, ensure that you're not electing the candidate you don't want, right? Because if your minor party doesn't reach a threshold, then your actual vote will go to the person that you think is a better representation of your interest in the major parties or whatever minor party. You could pick 2 minor parties. But I think that would be interesting. Although, again, here's my problem. Voters don't really always understand even the way we vote right now. And we've tried to simplify it. Like, I remember we were on this program after the primaries and somebody was handed their ballot, you know, in the primary election. And they went over and they stuck the blank ballot in the machine. And they had not filled it out, and because they were confused,
right?
You know, and I went out to vote today. Good turnout in my district, and there was obviously a first time voter there who didn't know what to do once they got their thing. And you know, they're very helpful and they were guided. And there's a lot of people who are going to the voting place today and they're inactive because they've moved or something, and they got a mailing and it got returned to the Board of Elections, so they haven't been stripped out of the registration yet. So boy, my only problem with complicating voting by helping people is that it absolutely might drive more people away. Because as Dan was saying, you know, he didn't quite get the Electoral College and why it works. And our shorthand is always, well, you know, the framers didn't like the people or some such without, you know, getting. I mean, yes, they were fearful of the tyranny of the majority and demagogues running for elected office. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, let me get Shamika on line one. Go ahead, Shamika.
Hi. I actually wanted to piggyback on what was said about the third party in the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. I actually agree with the fact that he's protesting because I'm going to be honest with you, not a lot of people wanted Hillary, they wanted Bernie Sanders. And he, even though he ran as a Democrat, he's actually independent. And the reason why I feel that people are so angry is because they don't have choices. if we had a multi-party system, I believe that the Electoral College either would not have this much power or would not be needed in general. And I feel like, why do we need to have like this two-party system? Why do we have to settle for one or the other? And I feel that his protest is coming from a place of anger, especially since he's right. She has not done anything for people of color. She hasn't done anything for Native Americans. When it comes to the protest that's going on in Dakota right now, she would basically drop the ball on that, possibly because she is getting something out of this corporation that's actually trying to put this pipeline in. So I'm not a registered voter. I will admit that now, because I do not want to take part in this system.
Okay.
Whether she gets a vote or not, whether she wins or not, I feel that a vote for Hillary is not going to change the fact that Donald Trump opened this Pandora box of racism, colonialism, sexism, and all other forms of oppression that's going on right now. I'm literally afraid for us. I'm literally afraid for people of color. So it's like, I understand why he is not trying to be involved in this or not wanting to get this vote in for Hillary Clinton. I completely understand it, and I actually agree with it.
All right, Shamika, can you stay there for 1 second?
Sure.
Okay, because what I want to do is I want to let our listeners know what Shamika is referring to. If you missed the opening of this program, when she's talking about the protest vote, she's talking about the story out of Washington State in which one of the 12 Democratic electors is saying, look, I'm part of the Electoral College, and my state's probably going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and I am not going to cast that vote for her in the Electoral College. I won't do it. I'm a Native American. I don't think she represents our people. I think she has been a very divisive figure. I think she should be in prison. That's what this man named Robert Sashikum has said. And what I think we've been referring to it as a protest vote. It could actually swing the election. If Hillary Clinton had exactly 270 electoral votes and you had one of the electors in the Electoral College saying, I'm not going to do it. But what Shamika is saying is she understands that. She understands the protest behind that and the reason behind that. So I take that point. I want to follow up and ask you, Shamika, just about the fact that you're not registered to vote at all. Is that correct?
I am not registered to vote at all.
Okay. And I certainly know exactly what you're saying about your frustration on the national level, on the presidential level. What about local elections? What about other elections where a lot of the governing happens and the decisions are made? Do you want to be involved in those decisions?
You know what, though? I think that I do want to be involved in those in that particular in the local elections. I do want to be involved. But I also feel like there are many levels of involvement. Just because I am not a registered voter doesn't mean that I cannot hold anyone accountable through literary activism, direct action, radical activism, and I'm not saying people getting hurt or anything like that, but basically taking it to the streets and protesting and making our voices heard, or using social media as a tool to talk about politics. And I feel that there's this black and white ideology pertaining to voting and getting involved in politics in general, not just local politics or national politics, that you vote or die, or a vote for no one is a vote for Trump. Mm. And I feel like we cannot resort to fear-mongering. We can't resort to, attacking people who don't want to vote or have not made a decision yet, because by doing that, you're not helping yourself, you're not helping your cause. And also, it's not going to make a difference anyway to go after people like that, knowing that there are many levels of activism out there now, especially with social media and millennials getting involved, all these political blogs and videos on YouTube and things of that nature. There are many, many ways that people can get involved. I actually have a radio show myself. On WAYO.
On WAYO, yeah.
Rochester.
Yep, 104.3, yes.
So I have a radio show, do independent radio, and I talk about politics a lot. Me and my co-host do that.
Okay.
So that's our way of getting involved. And I feel that this election is pretty much, like, it was a circus. It was a circus because people were going after one another. So, yes, I feel that, long story short, I do want to get involved in local politics. I feel like that's where people need to focus their energies, because that's where we have the most power, and we can hold our local officials accountable, okay? But I also feel, too, like on the national level, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump does not represent the people, especially people of color. And whether one or the other wins, I feel that it will not take away the fear and take away the fact that neo-Nazis now feel that they have power. And if Hillary wins, what is she going to do about that?
Okay.
Because... You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I certainly do. And I'll one more quick question, and I'll let you go here. I'm thinking about the fact that right now, out on Susan B. Anthony's grave, it's become a national story. There are remarkable amounts of people. I think Tim Nealon said his daughter tried to get out there today, couldn't even get to the gravesite. They can't even park out there. In many ways, it's a beautiful and poignant sight. And I'm sitting here as the easiest thing to be in the world, which is a white male in America. I've never had anybody want to oppress me. I've always been in this, you know, sort of the easy class of power. Voting was always sort of a birthright. And I think about women. I think about people who are not white. I think about oppression. And I think, you know, what I want to make sure is that if people are choosing not to vote, they feel that at least they're involved. And what you're saying to me is, look, I feel I'm involved in my community. I'm making impact in some way. I did want to ask you, is there anything that would convince you to register and to get involved and vote, even if it's just on a local level in the future?
Probably not. I feel that, like I said, there are many other ways for me to get involved. I do feel that people need to know about their local politicians. I feel that people need to be educated on what's going on in their community and what they can do, even if they are not registered to vote or choose not to do that. What can they do to actually get involved? I personally, it's going to take a lot for me to basically say I'm going to be a registered voter, because I really do not trust the system in any way, shape, or form, because it's never worked on behalf of my family or Black folks in general. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
However, I do feel that I can hold them accountable by using my writing, my radio show, and other forms of communication to basically say, like, look, people who believe in you voted for you. At least you can do is do the job that you said you were going to do.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And if you don't do that, you are going to be held accountable in more ways than you can imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just like Tiana Magnon, who I follow on Twitter, who's been on this program as well. She tweeted today, I'm with her. I just voted for Hillary. She better be with me starting in January. And that's exactly what Shamika is saying, is, you know, you have to govern in a way that you promise. Shamika, thanks for taking the time to call and at least share your thoughts. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for asking me questions. I appreciate it. I enjoyed myself.
You got it. That's so there you go. There's a thoughtful person who's still choosing not to be involved in the voting process. I'm late for our only break. Our panel's going to respond to what you just heard. And there's someone who you might not expect on Shamika's side of all this. Who is that? You're going to hear on the other side of this break next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the city of Rochester has been working on a climate action plan, and we are finally seeing some of the details. The city of Rochester's plan for energy use, transportation and reducing fossil fuel consumption, waste management, clean water, and land use. It's all part of the CAP, the Climate Action Plan, and we take a good look at it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On this election day, we're talking to people like Shamika, who you just heard, regular citizens who are deciding to vote or not vote today, and talking about the Electoral College, talking about the process. Dan Becker's in studio. He's an undecided voter who's going to vote. What time are you going to vote today, sir?
I'm probably going to try to get out as soon as I'm done with this.
All right, so you're going to head over, and then he's going to have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Donovan, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College, and Tim Nealon, who's the chairperson of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. And who agrees with Shamika? Well, comedian George Carlin, who says, you know, people like to say, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. This is what George Carlin had to say about why he doesn't vote.
They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who in fact did not even leave the House on election day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with.
That's George Carlin, and it, you know, he's funny, but that's also social commentary, and he's essentially agreeing with Shumika. Kathleen Donovan, I'm going to start with you. You heard a lengthy conversation with someone who cares about her community, but she does not vote. She's not even registered to vote. What do you think?
I think that's great, right? That she was saying there are other ways to get involved, and we often forget about that, and a lot of people don't participate in those activities. As I was saying over the short break, I think that that's sort of an exception to the rule. Most people who are engaging in protests and contacting their legislators are also registered to vote. That's sort of like the lowest level of participation, and if they're taking the time to do these other forms that require a lot more effort, that typically they're also engaging in that. So I think that that's a somewhat unusual situation. But, you know, I think George Carlin, it's funny, but I would still disagree with him, right? At the end of the day, you might not be happy with the choices you have, and perhaps you should get involved in those other forms of political participation, becoming more involved in a party and getting involved in local politics more, right? But at the end of the day, that those are the two choices. And so I think there's still more value to weighing in on those choices than to totally abstain from the vote altogether.
Okay. I know that Dan Becker and Tim went away. And Dan, you said something that Shumika said was kind of touching a chord with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went through...
Get right on that microphone.
I went through a period where I was really considering not voting. And it was for a similar reason to what she was saying. Now, she has even more resources than I do to talk to the public about her opinions and everything like that with having a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I decided not to, at the end of the day, fall into that line of thinking is because for me, it felt too much like planning a battle and then not fighting in it, you know? And at the end of the day, I was like, if I'm going to dedicate this much of myself to being a social activist, to try to create this sort of change, at the end of the day, we're a voting system. At the end of the day, it's those votes that are going to matter. You know, who we put into office and who we elect in office, they get elected by votes. Now, yeah, those votes are swayed by the social activism part of it, and I get that, and that's a huge part, like what you were saying. I think people need to be more active in that. But at the end of the day, if that's all you're doing and you're not doing the one thing you need to do to actually put that person into office, I mean, you can make the biggest, longest, most convincing Facebook post in the world. At the end of the day, that's not going to put this person into office.
But Dan, she's saying there's no one on the ballot that represents her.
And, you know, and that's hard for me to relate to. Like what you were saying, you know, I'm a white middle-class guy living in Fairport. I don't think I've ever been oppressed with anything. And I had a conversation with my friend last night who is voting for Hillary. And one of the things I mentioned was, you know, Hillary comes off to me as a dirty politician. And her response to me was, well, Dan, here's the thing. You think that because you're a man. And I said, what? And I hadn't been told that before. And she said, when women in power try to have power, try to display power, it often comes off as they're being mean, they're being strict, they're being irritating. And that's why you're thinking that, is because you're looking at it from this male perspective. And I was kind of like, that's interesting. I couldn't really defend the point either because I was a man and, you know, I can't say.
So even agree or disagree at least made you think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And ultimately, again, as much as what Shumika said rang true in many ways with you, you're still going to vote today.
Correct.
And you will vote for somebody even if you don't feel that great about who you're voting for.
Correct.
Okay. Tim Nealon, what would you say to Shumika?
I would say, Shumika, look, I understand. But the way the system works really well is that activism and voting are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, you know, all of the people who wanted a pure politics maybe came to the Bernie Sanders crusade a little late. And if they had been on board earlier, he might – I mean, people did not take Bernie Sanders seriously, and he fought that fight right up to the very end, and you needed the party leaders and elected officials to help Hillary, you know, move the margin and get the nomination. You know, same thing – people didn't take Donald Trump seriously, but people who've never voted before were registered and voted. But if you look down the ballot, we had a really interesting Green Party candidate in the mayoral election. We've got all sorts of minor party opportunities here in Monroe County where it could be grassroots and you could really shape the kind of politics and policies. And the more votes minor parties get, the more likely the major parties are going to take those policy issues seriously. Why do you think we've become so green since 2000? I mean, even George W. Bush took the Green Party seriously after that very interesting election that led to Florida and Ralph Nader running. I would encourage you to look and see, because I looked, you know, that down the ballot, we have all sorts of opportunities of putting people into power who are not usually representative, like Melissa Barrett, who would go on to the court and be the first African-American woman in the county court system, I believe. So, I mean, this would be a really interesting time period, but people are so focused on the presidential, they forget about these down ballot races where your vote counts. I mean, this guy Bob Zink, who's on the ballot, he won his primary by three votes. Think about your vote being engaged in pushing someone over
sure.
the line.
Last November, our friends in Geneva listening on WEOS and Finger Lakes Public Radio, I think the mayoral election in Geneva was one vote. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right.
Okay.
And even on sort of intermediate races, right, the congressional race last time between Slaughter and Assini was, what,
several
800?
Hundred. Yeah, 800 or 900 votes.
Yes, and that's
out of 190,000.
Yeah, so that's not that many. And we do. I mean, there's so much focus on the presidential election, and people show up, and then they're like, oh, there's all these other races. Wish I'd thought more about that ahead of time.
Yeah.
So.
And a person in the House can really help decide what kind of development is going to happen in your region. But also state politics. All of the state Senate and all of the assembly seats are open. And for a variety of reasons, many of these people don't even have opponents. But if people would come out and challenge them, even on minor party ballots, it would give people options and choices, and it could remake the system. And I know I sound like an optimist because I am.
Well, that's right. Was it Garry Kasparov from Bobby Fischer fame? He tweeted today, he said, all the nerve endings you're feeling, Americans, you're nervous about this election, isn't that a blessing? An election with the outcome not preordained. That's actually something that much of the world would love to have. And that's a good point, isn't it, Tim Miller?
Excellent.
Let's get through as many phone calls as we can now. Mark in Greece. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yes, at the beginning of the program, I was somewhat disdained over the fact that you called him a joker and that the Republican Party was taking over, a hijacked. It's those kind of comments that come from the media in general that has really put me off as a voter, because I can't concentrate on the facts. So when you talk about the issues that surround, say, the Republican Party and how they're hijacked, they weren't hijacked. The Republican Party was voted by the people of the Republican Party, and therefore Trump was their candidate. Now, I'm not pro-Trump. I'm definitely not pro-Trump. But it's those pick-and-choose a la carte items where we say one day that the government's good, like when the FBI director said, oh, we're not going to charge Hillary, and everyone praised him for it. And then he came out and said, wait a minute, there's some more emails that we haven't gone through yet as a result of the Wiener investigation. And then they jumped on him as being a bad person. So I this whole process, and last but not least, WXXI, being a public radio network, you are my last bastion of hope for civility. And when I hear these comments coming from the moderators, the hosts, whether it's public or it's going to be national or local, I got to turn off the radio.
All right, Mark, so stay there for 1 second, okay? Because I want to do something here. I want to tell you that I think you're right. I should not have referred to this gentleman, Robert Sashikam, in Washington State as a joker. I would feel that way if we got to a point where Hillary Clinton was on 270 and Donald Trump was on 268 and this guy just decided it's too important for me and I'm going to exercise my right as an Electoral College voter, even though my state handily went to Hillary Clinton. I don't like her and I'm going to deny her 270 and throw it to the House of Representatives. I would feel that way.
But this is a party. This is This is our government. This is our process.
No, I'm with you. But hold on. Just let me finish here, because I think what's important for me to say is I was wrong to open the program with that comment. I think it's a fascinating story out there, and I'm glad you called me on it. And I want to thank you for that, because I can do a little bit better. I would be very, very dismayed if our entire election came down to one guy we've never heard of in Washington who's just making a protest vote that turns into not a protest vote, but swinging the entire election. I would find that to be an indication that there is something wrong with the process. But if it is a vote of protest and it moves the final Electoral College numbers by one, I understand it. And I also understand you're feeling that WXXI and NPR and public radio have to be bastions of civility. And so thank you. And I wanted you to know that I'm glad you called in. And I think I take the point. I take the point on that one. So
thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to call. You know, he's absolutely right. And Robert Sashkin feels like Shermika does, like a lot of people, that, okay, I'm a Democratic elector, but this is not the candidate that I want, and for a lot of very passionate reasons. And as Kathleen and Tim have been saying, that's what the Constitution does allow. Now, again, if we get down to 270, and this is going to get really weird if that actually happens, and go to 538, go to Nate Silver's website. Yeah. There is a path for 270 or 269, well, 269.
There
it
always
could
is,
happen.
But I
it
just,
could happen.
I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that, I could even see, actually, if something strange like that, I could see somebody in a Republican state voting for Hillary. I just don't see what this nation really wants after this election is healing. Right, there's a Gerald Ford out there somewhere in some Republican state that would make sure that Hillary won it if it was.
Well, that's why I said I want to start a lunches for Clinton and Trump supporters on a monthly basis after the election. You know, we should do that. You know,
could you throw in a massage?
Yeah, everybody's tense.
Exactly.
Chris in Brockport, next up. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, so I just wanted to make a comment that without the Electoral College, everything would end up just. All the elections would be focused around the major cities. And by having the Electoral College there, we get a more broad brush of the American society. And I also wanted to say, as a white male, I completely agreed with your earlier caller regarding the fact that our voices really don't matter when it comes to national politics. It really only comes down to local politics. And that's being said as a Republican voter.
As a Republican voter?
Yeah.
Okay, so you feel like, given the Electoral College system, your vote on the presidential election just doesn't matter. Is that right?
I live in New York, just like you. So we already know who's going to be elected by New York. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually voting Hillary. I'm actually voting Libertarian. Because I feel my voice will be heard more.
Yeah.
By doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I understand that. I mean, libertarians are. It's going to be very interesting to see if Johnson and Bill Weld get to 5% nationally. So maybe that's
Johnson's
a way.
Johnson's kind of an idiot.
Okay. Which is its own show.
I voted for him already, but he is an idiot.
Okay.
But I can't stand either of them.
Well,
him, so.
Bill Weld is certainly not an idiot. And Gary Johnson.
I
don't think Gary Johnson's an idiot. I think he's had a few moments where he hasn't come off looking good, but listen, I do 500 hours of radio a year. I do plenty of moments where I don't look very good, and one of our callers called me on it today, so it happens. But let me just real briefly to make sure I understand, you'd like to see a popular vote, is that right?
No, I actually it'd be the exact opposite. I actually kind of like the electoral vote.
Okay.
That I just think it needs to be revised. And
I see.
Kind of like Maine, or is it North Dakota that does proportional?
Nebraska is it Nebraska and Maine, or just Nebraska?
Nebraska and Maine.
Nebraska and Maine. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Nebraska and Maine. And I think that because in that way, New York's not just ruled by the city. The Western New York, the upstate counties can actually have their voices heard without it just being drowned out with the with New York City's voice being.
The dominant one. Yeah, absolutely. Chris, thanks for the phone call. We're running out of time. Kathleen, I'm not a math guy, but what Chris is saying, he's right. Nebraska and Maine are proportional, right? So, but isn't that then a de facto popular vote system if every state went that way? Or am I wrong?
It is more reflective of the popular vote, but it's still not going to be exact because they award it two electoral votes, for example, in Maine go, or excuse me, in Nebraska go statewide, and then they have three congressional districts, and they award it within each congressional district.
So it's possible.
Right? So it's still not going to be a perfect match.
So if every state did it the Nebraska way, it is possible that you could have a popular national vote winner different than the Electoral College winner, but much less likely. Is that...
I doubt it. Because remember, usually the two Senate votes go to the person with the most votes in that state anyway.
Okay.
So they would be reflective then of that. So I think that's the check there.
Well, we'll see. And Chris, thanks for that phone call. And thanks for all the calls and the feedback this hour on this very interesting election day. You know, if you're like me, you're always checking 538 to see all the different paths and the different scenarios. And, well, I guess we're going to find out in about... 8 hours or so. We're getting there. And now it's time for our friend Dan to go vote. I'm not going to ask you who you're going to vote for. I'm just going to tell you thank you for being here and for sharing your perspective on this.
Absolutely.
It's great, been great having you.
Absolutely.
Kathleen Dunham, great having you. Thank you for your perspective and expertise as well. And Tim Nealon, happy Election Day. Thank you very much. Tim is the most optimistic person about elections I've ever met. So.
It's all good. Don't worry.
Let's get a short break and more connections next.